your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Metaphysical, paranormal, you know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Cruz, your host tonight, and this is the Journey Radio Show. Well, we're talking about Bigfoot tonight, and you know what that means. My fellow She-Squatcher, Jenna Grover, is on the line. Hey, Jenna, are you there?
I am, and I'm excited again to be on.
I am, too. We've got another female Bigfoot researcher as our special guest tonight. We've got Lori Simmons. She's coming to us from Washington State in the Cascades, and she is the author of a couple of different books, Tracking Bigfoot, and I believe the other one is Tracking Bigfoot, The Journey Continues. Is that right? Oh, great. I have a good memory.
You do.
So I'm not going to waste any more time. We're just going to bring Lori on with us. She fits in so well with us. We're getting along great already. Hey, Lori, are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Welcome to the show. I'm so excited. And so we've been getting to know Lori a little bit here, but for our listeners who don't know, and they're just coming in on the show here, can you tell us how you got started in doing Bigfoot research?
Yes, actually, I didn't always believe in Bigfoot. In fact, it was my father that I'm walking in his footsteps. My father, Donald Wallace, lived in the Northern Cascade Mountains in a little town called Marble Mount and would visit us kids on the weekends. I grew up in Kirkland. And he tracked Bigfoot for 28 years, and he lived in the Cascade Mountains for 30 years. My father was a real live mountain man. He lived completely off the grid. His backyard he had was the Cascade River he would fish out of. He would catch fish and he would go hunting. And I'm not proud, but back in the day, he was a trapper for fur. And it was for survival. And I grew up in Kirkland. Yes, I grew up going shopping at the W Square Mall, and my father was a mountain man, so I had the best of both worlds. He taught me tracking skills. He taught me the importance of when you're walking down the trail and going fishing to look for signs. You always want to be aware of what animal is ahead of you. So my father taught me tracking skills, and that's where I learned my outdoorsy skills was from my father. And he wrote a book called Tracking Bigfoot. That's the first one. And unfortunately, he lost his battle to cancer. And that was April of 2010. And it was his dying wish that I promised him I would have his book published. He wanted people to know the truth and that they are real. They do exist. And, you know, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it even when my father was alive. But I had my brother take me out to the areas where our father would track, and he would never let me go in those areas. And the first time I went to the old logging road, which is where it all started for my father back in September of 1981, actually, when he was deer hunting with my uncle. And my uncle had his son Terry, and my dad had my brother Mike. And that's when they came across their first Bigfoot track in the area. And so that's what started it for my dad. And so here my father passed away, wanted to know what it was all about, had my brother take me into these areas. And then I learned the truth. I mean, I always believed in my dad. But, you know, and I completely understand, like, friends of mine and family members, you just have to experience for yourself. And so I did. I've had, it's 8 years later now, I've had 3 sightings in 8 years. I've felt the fear of death of a roar at me, which you're going to hear one of the growls coming up soon. And that's just a baby purr compared to what he can really do. So, and I'm still doing this. I'm still conducting my father's research because I just feel like his 28 years can't go unsolved. So I get it. I totally understand now why people have been conducting field research for 20, 30 years. Now I understand. So I'm excited to be where I am today and that I have amazing groundbreaking evidence that I'm going to share this year at the Sasquatch Summit. I'm going to be a guest speaker for the first time. So, yeah. And many of you don't know this, but that during the last 2 years of John Bindernagle's life, he assisted me with my research. And we were in the process of publishing a science paper. And so, unfortunately, time ran out for John and ran out for my father. So I feel like I have to carry the torch and I have to finish this. So, yeah.
Wow, incredible. You got to work with him while he was still with us.
Yes. I have all this amazing data and videos. I've actually posted a couple little video clips of John out in the field with me. It's on my YouTube channel. Just look up Lori Simmons.
Awesome. Awesome. So that's the key to find her on YouTube. Lori Simmons, everybody. So check that out when you get a chance.
Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. So can you tell us about this event that you're going to be speaking at? Where is it located and when is it?
The Sasquatch Summit is held in Ocean Shores and it's always the weekend before Thanksgiving in November, and so it's at the Quinault Hotel and Casino in Ocean Shores.
Is that Washington State?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm just saying Ocean Shores and you have no idea.
We are in Minnesota, North Dakota. We have no idea where that is. But we're learning. We are learning. It would be nice for us to come out there for that too, wouldn't it, Jenna?
That would be wonderful.
That would be amazing. It's too bad. And that's coming up so soon. Right
before Thanksgiving?
Yes, it's
that's
always
a long
the
time
weekend
from now.
Before.
And I was thinking Easter.
So it's hard, but I always demand that weekend off because I'm going to the ocean, is what I say.
Nice. Well, Jen, awesome. It really would be nice to go out there. We would love to meet you in person.
That would be excellent.
Too.
Yes,
she is the
definitely.
Best person. I just think she's awesome.
It's cutting out a little.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was on my end or if it was on her end. But Jenna, you're frozen. So.
Frozen. Oh, okay. Okay, now she's back. Yes, I would be so excited to meet all of you. Or if anything, come up to the Cascades this summer because I have purchased a piece of property that I own located in the heart of my father's research that he conducted for 28 years.
Wow. How exciting. Yes. I would love to come out there.
It's exciting and it's scary.
It would be pretty neat to look at the coordinates, too, and just see if we can do some remote viewing and see what we find.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. The difference of the research that you've conducted in your areas compared to the Cascades.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
We'll have to play with that off the air.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
That would be awesome. Definitely. So can you tell us a little bit about when you went out into the field and you had your first Bigfoot experience? I mean, how did that happen for you? Was it mind-blowing? Was it scary? I mean, what happened?
Oh, my goodness, yes. So the first time I experienced my father's discovery. So my father's, his hypothesis is that, and I believe this to be true because of my experiences as well over the past 8 years, is that in the Cascades in the Northwest, Sasquatch uses underground. And so I'm not sure what, such as in your areas, if they use caves or do they use underground also? So the difference of their lifestyle, it just all depends on their climate. And so my father discovered that they use underground, and how he discovered this is that he followed the deep bass drumming sounds. It sounded like a hollow bass drum, and he followed that sound along the river bend, and he came up to a large Douglas fir tree that had a lookout at the bottom, and he could see movement. And there's images of these lookouts, photos my father actually did take, and it's on my website, trackingbigfoot.wordpress.com. And the back side, he noticed the back of the tree was covered whenever something was inside. And if you think about it, like lava tubes and caves, caverns, they'll have like a little lookout that's just on ground level. But once you get down inside it, it opens up and you are amazed of what a completely different world it is. And that's what I've experienced in the Cascades. And so my very first experience of my father's discovery was with my brother. And we ended up having to drive my dad's car that day. And my father hadn't been in the area or his car for at least 6 months at that time. And we got out of the car and it was like the forest came to life, like we were in the jungle. And we heard loud tree cracks. It sounded like they were surrounding us from all sides, and we heard the bumping, and we heard a growl. And I'll never forget, I asked my brother, he asked me, he said, "Laura, is that your stomach, the growl?" And I said, "No," and I shoved him out of the way, and I'm in the car, like, sitting backwards in the passenger seat, holding my camera, thinking that any moment now, we're going to be attacked. I'm in the car. My brother is still pounding on the hood of the car. And they're just going back and forth like it's a game. And so my father called him the big guy. So I do too. And he was just like they were playing a game. He was like pounding that hollow bass drum sound, which you'll hear in this audio recording. And my brother doing the same. And it was just a game back and forth. And I was so afraid. But I thought, wow. Like, when we left, I just thought, he really did know. And I needed to get someone down there to help us. And here I am 8 years later. And I've taken amazing people with credentials into the area, and I'm just still going, trying to.
And you're hooked.
I'm hooked. It's a way of life for me now. I do balance my family and home life, but I have a second home up there now too, because it's a way of life for me.
Yeah. It's addicting, isn't it?
It is. It is. You got to live life on the edge sometimes.
I agree, girl. Let's just, life is that journey, that fun time. Let's do it. And I love the fact, because I read some of the information that you had online. So I knew kind of what you were talking about in your story. And I just laughed because you said that your brother was actually taking you into the scarier places that your dad said, no, that's too dangerous. And
Exactly. Yeah.
And so you heard, Wendy, you heard your first like scream or roar. What was that like for you?
Well, I'll tell you, when I heard the roar, the fear of death throughout my body, and what does that feel like? Oh my God, I am a mother, and I did not know if I was going to be able to make it alive. I felt the fear of death in me when he roared, and it was because I was being intrusive. I was establishing a trusting relationship, and also at the same time, crossing that borderline of conducting scientific research. And so I do both, and I crossed that line. I was in the field with Professor Brian Sykes collecting DNA. Trying to anyways. We set up hair traps, and also with my ex. And so this what Professor Brian Sykes came up with to collect hair was, it was a metal stake from the home store, and then a block of wood, and then you wrap Gorilla Tape around that, and then we zip tied it together, and we stuck the stakes in the ground, hoping that it would catch a hair. And so in Professor Brian's book that he published, the very first chapter is the big guy. And also there's another chapter that is knocked three times. So we did this study. He was in hopes of winning a Nobel Prize before retiring from the Oxford University.
Oh, wow.
And so that's when I was roared at. We went back the next day to check on those hair traps, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to make it out alive. So
were you worried that maybe it was another, like maybe it was a bear, or maybe it was a mountain lion, or, you know, what the different animals that are around your area?
No, it was coming from below me. The whole ground I stood on rumbled, and that's the thing. He has even pinpointed exactly where I was standing by bumping below my foot.
Oh my goodness, we have to go, Jen.
And this is what I've discovered. You see, my research area isn't just in the Cascades at this location, but it's kind of spread a little further down where I live, which is close to the Seattle area as well. And I was even in Mukilteo at the park, and I look up there and I see those hills. And I went hiking through the forests, and I discover they're there too. They seem to be everywhere here in the Northwest, no matter what direction I go. In the Blues, in Eastern Washington, I don't know if they're underground there, but what I have seen a lot in the Blues is caves. So it's possible they're in the caves there. Yeah.
Wow,
but you have to make your way up here. It's in
for sure. Well, I'm just so excited hearing about those underground. I mean, you said it was so incredible. Did you actually get to see anything down there? I mean, did you see what was underground, or was that just mainly your father who saw that?
I saw him above ground twice. Yes.
Tell us about that.
So I've seen that in that area. I have not been able to locate the lookouts. I think that they've covered it up. My father knew of three in the area. But I did have a sighting. I had two sightings. One was when I was going to... I was going to, I guess you'd say, when you're conducting research and you set up, like, you leave out food, We were also conducting scientific research, so also trying to collect hair DNA. So Professor Redmond Mullis had put tape around a plastic container that had food inside and poked holes in the top, so in hopes of catching a hair. So when we went back down the very next day, we went to look and see if there was any differences, looking in on the bait, sort of say, and documented, took photos, and as we were entering the forest, and we're walking down in, and it's dusk, it's starting to get dark, and as you walk further into the forest, it gets even darker, and I saw on the right, I saw one looking at me, and I caught him off guard, because he was walking, and I was wearing my camera too, and I just dropped my left leg, my knee down, and I was like, am I looking at you, and you're looking at me? And it was that 3-second moment, and I was just in awe, and then he just like was gone. He hid behind the big tree, and he was gone, and it was an incredible moment, and he wasn't like 9-10 feet tall. He was more like the shape, frame anyways, as my son, who's in his 20s. And he was all black. And I didn't see like a clear definition of like skin tone, so, or clothing. And he was upright, and I caught him when he was in a walk. And so that's what gave me the indication that it could have been a juvenile Sasquatch that I saw. And then The time I saw, I kept trying to coach my father's discovery, the big guy, out by just allowing him space and talking to him like he's a cute puppy dog, because at one time he almost came out. I felt the ground rumble as he was moving his body below us. And so I thought, well, maybe this time this is what I have to do. I have to give him space, continue to coach him, talk to him like he's a cute puppy dog, and see if he will attempt to come out again. Well, I continued that for a whole summer, and he did come out. I was at a distance of my car. There's forest of both sides of me, and I'm parked on a gravel road. And I had wrapped up a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in a paper towel, because if he has hands, then he must be able to open it. Or did a critter peck at it? So I wasn't able to get to his tree the time before because he was in an extremely grumpy mood when I brought up my boyfriend. And so I left it where I did in distance. So at this particular time, I was investigating, did he take the sandwich whole? Did a critter peck at it? And I heard him say a sentence, and it was a deep tone. I have no idea what he said. I don't hear very well anyways, but the sense that I got is that he felt very strongly about it, whatever he said, and it was a deep tone. And something that was alarming is it was not muffled, so I knew he was not underground. So here I am. I've been asking him to come out and coaching him to come out. And then I'm thinking, oh, never mind. Just kidding. And I'm wearing my camera, and I didn't have a GoPro at the time. And you just don't know how you're going to react. And I think that, you know, I'm going out there. I'm doing this. I want this to happen. It does. And then I'm like, oh, just kidding. Oh, you want an apple? And I like go back to the car, and I had my boyfriend sitting in the car because he wouldn't respond to me. And I said, okay, why don't you sit in the car? And he was reacting to me and, you know, back and forth. And he came out. So I felt alarmed, started to walk to my car, and I looked up just at a glance, just looked up. His like head, his face in between the trees looking at me. And I just thought, you know, I just thought, do you want an apple? And I got in the car. I mean, now I wish I could have gone back and I would have just stood there and been in the moment and been able to further my study. But obviously I wasn't mentally prepared to do that at that time. So,
and
we left rather quickly. My boyfriend didn't know. I'm like, let's go. Roll up your window.
That's funny because I always say you never know how you're going to react in the moment when you come face to face with Bigfoot. What are you really going to do? I always say, I jokingly say, we're going to be like, hey there, big boy, where you been all my life? But right? Really, what are we going to do? I don't know, you know, and we don't want to do the wrong thing.
Exactly.
Right.
But that's
right?
That's a great example, though, of, you know, here she had a camera, and people always say, well, if she had a camera, why didn't she just take the picture? You've got 3 seconds. Your mouth is probably dropped open. Your heart is probably beating out of your chest. And he's going, she sees me, or, you know, and I completely understand. It's a great example.
Exactly. And I felt alone with him. My boyfriend's in the car. I don't know what the big guy's intentions are. I've heard these stories, people telling me, be careful, Lori. You don't know what his intentions are. But yes, I know. I'm still here. I'm alive. He's never hurt me. And I had a very close encounter with him, which is caught on a, you know, the trail cam image. And I'm okay. But true, you don't know how you're going to react. And now I in owning my property, it's getting exciting. In fact, it wasn't that long ago. It was actually just a few weeks ago. My boyfriend woke up and he heard the front door handle start to shake like someone was trying to open up our door, and came back 15 minutes later and tried to open up our door again.
Interesting. So did you build on that property? Are you planning to build, or is this literally just land that you plan on investigating?
I am building on this property. Yes.
So this could be
thank you. It's a nice piece of land, so I can have a large group of people up there, and we have privacy, and we're surrounded by the forest. Yes.
We'll have to go out just us girls. Ooh.
Oh, yes.
We've done some experiments bringing guys out with us and then having them walk away and go down to the trail to the car and sit in the car. And it seemed very, very quiet when they were with us. And then as soon as they were gone, it's like things were coming in closer, big movement.
They do that. Yes.
I know.
I was wondering, I wanted to ask, have you experienced them surrounding you also when it's just you ladies out in the field? Because I've experienced that too. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It seems like they're more curious about us.
I think
and
so.
And they're more cautious of doing anything when the men are there, is what we've noticed.
Yes.
Even just one man.
Exactly. Exactly. I think even with one man, it... having someone be more of the alpha male watching over the women, that they stay away and they'll interact with you, but to a point. But if there's no men around, then they seem to come out of the woodworks from all directions. Yes. I've noticed that. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're at 10:30 Eastern time, so we're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay tuned, everybody.
...that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the producer and host of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. I am a published author, academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast who holds 4 advanced degrees with an interest in parapsychology and life after death issues. I have written about and encountered nearly 100 situations involving the paranormal, with my most frightening experience being a floor-length mirror cycling around in front of me in a haunted room I had stayed in. I invite you to tune in Thursday evenings at 11 o'clock p.m. to 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
We're back on the air. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We were chatting away over the break. I am so excited about this. Off the air, I asked Lori that the sound recordings that she sent in for us to play on the air tonight, I asked her, just to clarify, and I'm going to ask her again now so you all can hear. The recordings, the sound recordings that you recorded, the sounds are coming from below you? Is that right?
Yes, they are. Ooh. And in fact, I have a device that was sponsored to me for my research, and it's a wildlife audio acoustic recorder, and it's a good $1,000 piece of equipment. And I use that to record over 400 hours. And this is just a little bit of the sounds I've recorded.
Wow. I think we should play those right now, and then we can talk about that some more. So, Sarge, could you play the first audio for us, please?
That's a draw.
Okay, so what was that that we were hearing in that recording?
Okay, so that was the first time that John Bindernagle went into my area and assisted me with my study and research. And not many of you know that he conducted research during the last 2 years of his life helping me. And we were in the process of publishing a science paper. And so I'm still in hopes of doing that. But that was the very first time that John entered this area with me. And as I said, that was a growl. John, you can hear, there's a couple of minutes of the best of what happened that day. And you can tell he's very surprised and shocked. And he'll even tell you, this is shocking. Because this happened below ground. And we went to the area at first, and it was as if it was just eerie quiet, and we continued with our research, and I thought, let's just go back. Let's just give it a try, and that's what happened.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, so, and I do have to mention that these sounds were analyzed by David Ellis, and so this is looped, and he did enhance the sounds in this audio for your viewing.
So what were his conclusions on the analysis of the audio?
Well, David Ellis did create sonograms for me, which I'll share at the Sasquatch Summit, and that the growl is not a bear coming from underground. It's not a hibernating bear. In fact, the big guy's sonogram is his own sonogram. It does not match with any known animal.
Wow. That's fabulous.
That is incredible.
Awesome.
And there's more sounds that he did pull. And that is the groundbreaking evidence. That's part of it that I'll share. But I'm happy to share this with you today.
I'm excited.
I do have to mention that when you go online and listen to it online, you can hear it a little bit better than on the radio here. Because I noticed I listened to it on your, I believe it was Facebook, or was it on the website?
It might be your internet connection too, Jenna. It is on YouTube. It's the comparison video, and you'll see an image of a gorilla. And the comparison video is what I created for John Bindernagle to share with his colleagues. It's there's also the breakdown, and it's comparison to wild gorillas, their behavior, primate behavior, and also at the very end, it's trees that do make the knocking and bumping sounds in the wind in comparison to his behavior. So it gives you that comparison in this video. It's exciting.
It's definitely worth a watch. So if you can get out there and watch it, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to share the link with that too. So should we listen to the next audio clip?
Yes, yes.
Wow. Okay. So was that enhanced? Is that what it sounded like in person?
That was enhanced also. And that was a growl. And I recorded that using my handheld parabolic.
Mm-hmm.
But it was enhanced by David Ellis. Yeah.
And he felt that.
It was still intense. We were just at a short distance. And something I learned from my father is just to always, in dealing with any kind of wild animal, if they want you to back off, you need to back off and give them space. So it's not so much of that I didn't have fear to walk closer with John, but having that respect, just let him cool off and come back again later. So
you felt he was being crabby there.
Yes. In fact, I even say he was being grumpy.
Yes. Wow. Okay. So should we play the last clip?
Yes, you should. I believe the last one is the whole segment.
Goodness. Hi! How are you? You having a good day? No? Okay. We're gonna walk up here to the river. You have a good day!
Oh, goodness.
He's
gone. Is that so?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
We're going to walk over to the river, okay?
Not that I disbelieve you, so why am I so shocked?
It's because it is shocking.
Yeah.
It is shocking.
Yeah.
See that one part? It was a
glow. Oh, did you hear that?
Yeah.
It was a glow. So you may be getting that. My card filled up. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. That's a
glass. Isn't that incredible?
Very.
Wow.
So that's a common reaction to someone experiencing what I do on a basis all the time for 8 years now. So yeah, he was grumpy. And so notice in my voice, I didn't let him know that he put any kind of fear in me. Mm-hmm. And when we were walking away and you could hear the growl and it was much louder, we were yards away from him and I recorded it with my parabolic. Yeah, that's how intense.
Wow. Do you think he was angry because you were with a man?
I think so, and it was a new man. So even though that this man was someone who could be, you know, my father, and there was no contact whatsoever, and John said he even had his hands in his pockets just to make that statement, we still got that reaction.
That was really smart of him, too, to do that.
Yes. Yes.
I believe in you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's just something I think would be incredible to experience.
It would be.
I have a question about walking on the ground where you know they're underneath you. Does the ground feel less solid? Does it feel like it could be hollow underneath you?
Check that out,
because that spot, I mean, there was two large trees growing, and they had been bent to intertwine like this, and they were growing this way.
Oh, that's incredible.
And I was like, you know, it feels to me like you're supposed to walk underneath the X.
Yeah.
So we did, and we walked into the woods right there. And
what it is, that's what it feels like.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I have been looking for this book, and I don't know if any of your audience have seen it, but I have been looking for this book. My father, since he was so old school and he was experiencing the underground activity, he had Mount Rainier and Mount St. Helens, and we have Mount Baker. My area is close to Mount Baker and the lava tubes, and my area has the second largest lava tube in the state of Washington, so there might be something to
now I'm convinced, Jenna, we need to go up there.
I am very convinced myself. Come in fact now. we've got to make plans.
It's an airplane ticket and I will pick you ladies up. This is the sheep watchers.
Yes, I'm ready. In fact, I'm ready to pack a bag today.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. We're gonna have to plan a trip out there. Maybe we could do that in the fall. If we came out for that event that you're doing and stayed a little bit before or after, maybe that would be a good time to come. And it doesn't sound like that's the time that we have any events going on. We have so many events that we're going to this year starting in June, and we're just jam-packed until, well, through October. So
well, you know, the audio that you heard of John Bindernagle's first experience in my area was right after the Sasquatch Summit convention. That's when I met John. And right after, a few days later, he visited my location with me. So it's very well possible you can come up to my area after the conference and we'll have a camp out on my property and see if they come in.
That sounds like an awesome good time, Jenna. We're going to have to look into that.
Oh, yes.
Please. I'm excited. All you need is a plane ticket and I'll drive you there.
This sounds like a great time.
Definitely. We'll find out which airport we need to go to after the show.
Just go to Seattle.
Right. Oh, we're going to have to look into that event and yeah, that would be amazing.
That would be wonderful. I would be so thrilled to have you guys there.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome.
At the Sasquatch Summit.
Yes. Oh, that would literally take us from coast to coast this year.
Yeah. You have to do it.
I think we do. I think this is like going to have to happen.
I need my
Jen,
she
for sure.
Squash. Yes, I need my she squashers.
Yes.
That was a tongue twister for a moment there.
We'll have to get you a t-shirt.
Yes.
We'll go out there dressed in our hot pink.
Yes, in our gorgeous blonde long hair.
Yes, yes. There we go. They won't know what to do with us, that's for sure. You know, we're pretty loud. We're pretty loud out in the field. We laugh and giggle and sing. And we definitely don't try to sneak up on anything.
Exactly. I think they just love to interact with us. Yeah. I think so. I think having us females out in the field, we get a lot of amazing response. I think if a man does go out there, I think it's beneficial if they do have a female go with them also. It just, you know, for the vibe.
So when you're out there, you go out there just by yourself?
No, normally I do bring a male with me, but now that I have my property, I have been conducting yard work. And so I've experienced a couple of things. I'm just out there by myself doing some yard work. And I did learn what it was like to live in the Cascades by myself for 3 weeks in the winter. I learned and I lived it. My father was a mountain man, and he did it for 30 years. And the winter, it is dark. It's Alaska dark. And I survived it. And that was me pushing it. I pushed it to the top of the limit I think I'll ever go. Is I lived there for 3 weeks this winter. This past winter, I did it.
And is there cell phone signal there?
Is there a cell phone signal?
Yeah.
No, not inside my cabin. I had nothing.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
A lot of books?
Yes. Yeah. I would charge up my laptop in my car with an adapter so I could watch a movie inside the cabin at night just to kind of help me. And I'd have my cell phone charged up. And then I would play the melody, you know, relaxing music just to kind of drown out that I'm hearing some activity outside and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to go to sleep tonight.
Oh,
and I would sleep upstairs in my loft. I felt a little better. I slept upstairs in my loft.
So were you giving food, gifting food in your yard? And were they coming to take it?
I wouldn't do that because I'd set up boundaries that my cabin was my home. So I wouldn't do that, but I knew that he or they would come in and visit me. And I knew that he did, the big guy, come to visit me at my cabin. So that how I know that is more groundbreaking evidence I'm going to share at the Sasquatch Summit. And I'm so sorry I'm going to do it to you.
Oh, no. I want to know.
Oh, no.
But, he has a signal, and he it's what he does, and he lets me know he's in the area. So I hear that signal. Yeah. So it's exciting. And the signal is normally around 3 o'clock in the morning, because that's his time and not our time. Yeah.
See, now that's another question I was going to ask you about. Do you think they're more active at night, or during the day and night, or maybe just during the day?
Well, I think their awake time is when we're sleeping, honestly, because that's when they're trying to wake us up and say, hey, you came into my area, you were hiking and causing a commotion, and now I'm awake. Now it's time for you to interact with me. So that's the experience that I've had. Yeah, I think sometimes he's grumpy because he is sleeping.
So that's
a possibility. Yeah. Have you noticed more sightings are definite during the day also? It's both. Yeah, in my area.
For us, we've been looking for like evidence that we could collect, you know, structures, things like that. And it seems like right when the sun starts to go down, things start to get a little bit more active.
Yeah.
And you know, we've had experiences where all of our equipment went dead when it got dark. Like everything just went dead. Everything. And
isn't that bizarre?
It is so
and
bizarre.
You charge everything.
Yeah. And like even our big flashlight that is like, it's a spotlight that lights up the whole woods. And you only have to charge that thing every 6 months. And it went completely dead. Everything went dead. And all we had left were in my pack. I had 2 headlamps in my pack left. And then my cell phone had 13% charge left on it. And that was it.
That's
so we had 2 little headlamps, and it was pitch dark out to find our way out of the woods. And then there was all this noise around us all of a sudden, like big noises, and we're like, oh, I can't see anything, you know? It was crazy.
Because it's, yeah. And I wonder if we'll ever find out what the mystery to that is.
Right? Well, I've heard it before from other people that their equipment all goes dead at once. So there is something to that.
Yeah.
We're going to have to figure that out. And that sounds as that we're coming to the end of the show. But I just want to thank Lori Simmons for coming on the show. And check her out online on Facebook, Lori Simmons Research. And find
thank
her also
you.
On YouTube. And
thank
on Tracking Bigfoot was the name of her book. And she has 2 books out, Tracking Bigfoot. And Tracking Bigfoot, The Journey Continues.
Yes, thank you. And this is the year. I'm going to actually start sharing my data. I'm going to share and not be so secretive. And I'm excited. I have groundbreaking evidence I'm going to share this year at the Sasquatch Summit. So
can't
I'll see
wait.
You there.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Sarge. Thank you, Jenna.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, ParaX. Check us out online at thejourneyradioshow.com and find us on Facebook at The Journey on Radio. Take care, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.